All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 9 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Today we are going to get ready here to validate your level of expertise in the art of navigating to the ancient past. So everybody here is going to have to be able to be their own navigator. Everybody here is going to have to demonstrate that they can use the Portaland chart of history in order to be able to get from here to the ancient past and back with comfort, with expertise, with ease, so that you can, you know, so that we can continue on basically with the rest of the year on a solid foundation. We've been going over a kind of chart that leads us to the past, and it's really, really crucial that we know what it means and that everybody here can articulate it for themselves. So I'm going to give you guys a writing assignment today, and it's going to be pretty straightforward. But so if you find yourself at all struggling with the material, the writing assignment should help you to master it. If you're already a master of the material, then the writing assignment will give you an opportunity to show off and to produce a really polished, navigational chart to the past. So I think it'll be fitting for everybody. One of the things I want to do today as part of the assignment is that's unusual is I want everybody to be ready to write out notes to prepare for the writing. So you now, you know, if you're in the high school level, then you're used to the fact that you have to keep notes in this class for yourself. If you're in the junior high, you're probably still waiting on Mr. Powell to send you some notes, and I need to acknowledge that and apologize for the delay. And those notes are coming, and we're going to talk about an element of those notes right now, in fact, before we jump into the writing assignment. So you're probably not used to writing yourself within the class or taking your own notes, but today you need to. I'm going to put some stuff on the board and you're going to take it down. And that material is going to be critical to being able to write your paragraph assignment, which is what you're going to get. It should be easy. In fact, this assignment should be easy, and the outline that we're going to create together today is going to make that possible, but you need to write it down. Okay. So this is going to be part of the process of writing. So if you don't have writing supplies or typing supplies, then you need to get them now. And in the meantime, I'm going to just broach an important topic, kind of thinking topic, that I feel deserves a little bit of attention before we dive into our story of connecting the past and present. And that has to do, again, with clarity on the topic of democracy and republic. Okay? And the reason why I think this deserves more attention is because I am familiar with the fact that there are different versions of this kind of these themes out there. And you yourself will encounter different versions. And I think that there's one rather conventional answer to the question of what's the difference between a republic and a democracy that needs to be debunked, okay? That you need to be able to understand in its full and proper context. And it's too bad that Kenny's not here, because he was the one that brought it up. I'm really glad that he did, because I want to acknowledge this, notion, that circulates a lot in the teaching of American history. And I want you to understand why it's not correct. Okay. So, assuming you're getting out your writing stuff and all that, those of you who are ready here, I'm going to share my screen with you. And I'm going to show you just briefly what is going to be posted to the class webpage today. I promise. Okay, so the class notes will be published today, all the way through to week three. You know, all the material we've talked about will be on the class webpage for you. It's not there yet, and I've just been struggling a little bit to keep up. There's, you know, I've got some excuses, but anyway, I won't have to have any excuses by the end of today. I'll get them all on the class webpage, so you'll have them, and they'll look somewhat like this. Although there will be some elaboration here in the junior high class notes on the topic that we're gonna broach today. And remember that the key here, the essence of the difference between a republic and a democracy, is that a republic is designed to protect individual rights. In other words, that a republic is a system of government that recognizes that in a democracy, it's all too easy for the majority to trample the minority. And so how can you then have a system where, because, you know, you want to have a society where the people are, you know, in some sense in charge rather than being ruled by a king or by some other leader, right? And those tyrannical forms of government are what we don't want to have. We want a government, as they say, by the people and of the people and for the people. Okay. So, but how do we make sure that the people don't trample each other? Because they can do that too. And so this is what the founding fathers were so acutely aware of and afraid of, because they had studied history. And so when they were deciding to make the United States a republic, they were talking about what arrangements should be made in order to make sure that the people couldn't do this, that there were as many barriers as possible to the majority trampling on the minority and taking away its rights. And so this is why ultimately the best definition for a republic is a system of government that protects rights. And if we want to understand that even more correctly, we are not just talking about the minority, but ultimately, the point is that each individual has rights. The smallest possible minority is one person. You know, so imagine you have a government of the people, and they all vote, and the entire society wants one thing, and that other one individual doesn't. But of course, in a democracy, that's what happens. And you might think that it's kind of funny to project what a democracy is right down to, you know, this kind of exceptional circumstance where it's everybody against one person. But that is exactly what we are going to learn happened so symbolically in ancient Greece. And in the most notorious example of all, the society of ancient Athens voted to kill one person. And he's one of my heroes, so I will forever hold it against them. His name was Socrates, and they voted to put him to death. So that's why, you know, the ultimate statement of what a republic is to protect the minority right down to the smallest possible minority, which is one person. And it's not just to protect, oh, we'll have laws to protect 49%, or we'll have laws to protect any group that's larger than 10,000. I mean, none of that, you know, is what the essence of it is. The essence is that each individual has rights. The founding fathers talked about that in the Declaration of Independence. And therefore, a republic has to protect that. That's what the nature of a republic is fundamentally. But it is commonplace for people who are not, you know, well-versed in this idea of rights to have another definition for what a republic is. That's what I wanted to address in particular, because Kenny brought it up. And that definition comes from a very important source, which is why it carries some weight. And that source is a piece of writing called The Federalist, number 10. So those of you who have studied American history with me know that when the founding fathers were arguing, because they did, they debated and argued about what the United States should be, and they made the Constitution, then they were basically writing to the rest of the country and explaining what it was that they had done. And the Federalists were the people that were defending the Constitution. They were saying, we need to have this, and this is going to make a republic, and that this is better than any other form of government, and we need to do this. And James Madison, who later became one of the presidents of the United States, the fourth one, was basically the architect of the Constitution and one of its greatest defenders. And this piece called Federalist Number 10 is, in fact, to my mind, the most, and a lot of historians get this, it's the defining defense of what Madison was thinking of when he wanted to make the United States a republic. So if you ever take the History of American Government course that I gave, and I don't know if and when I'll give it again, but if you ever take that by recordings, it's kind of an honors history class for high school level. So if you're in the 12th grade and you're wondering what to take, you should take the History of American Government. And in that class, we read Federalist Number 10, and we read a bunch of other sources to discuss the issue of the intention of the Founding Fathers. And so it's a really, really super important paper on what a republic is. And if we go ahead and we search for the keyword republic, and not that particular one, but keep going, and here we go. We get to a very interesting quote. And this is exactly what Kenny was bringing up in the class. And notice what it says here. It says, a republic, and this is James Madison writing, the architect of the Constitution, right? And he says, by which I mean a government in which the scheme of representation takes place. See, and then just below that, he says, it varies from pure democracy. And so people, and the two great points of difference between a democracy and a republic. See, this is why people, really, really interested in this set of statements, right? Because I'll read it. The two great points of difference between a democracy and a republic are, first, the delegation of government in the latter to a small number of citizens elected by the rest. Secondly, the greater number of citizens and greater sphere of country over which the latter may be extended. So people have read this, okay, and they quote this, and history textbooks will quote this as the definition of a republic. And it's a big mistake. It's a big mistake because, well, I wonder if anybody here can tell me why it would be a mistake to basically take these lines out of Federalist Number 10 and then use them as a definition for republic. Who can tell me why that's a mistake? As a basic issue, there's a logical fallacy involved in taking these lines and claiming that they are a definition all by themselves. Abby, what is the fallacy?
Because this statement is more kind of explaining the difference between republic and democracy more than giving a definition for republic.
Okay, that's interesting. That's an aspect, but that's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for has to do with taking this section out of the whole. What kind of fallacy is that? Does anybody know what that is? When, let's say somebody's talking, and then this is often something that people do nowadays. It's all too common. Especially if a politician that they don't like says something, then what they do is they take a small part out of a quote and they use that as if it is the quote. Does anybody know what that's called? When you take out a small part of a whole and treat it as if it is the meaning of the thing. What's that called? What is it that you are losing if you say that this is the essence and, what about all this? What are you losing? What's all that other stuff? Theo? Excellent, right? If you quote somebody out of context, then that's the fallacy. It's called context dropping. Okay? So people who take this little passage out of James Madison's writing are guilty of context dropping. As Abby suggests, you know, what James Madison is saying here is he's focused on making a certain distinction pertaining to a republic, especially given the fact that it's going to be extended over a large country. And this was a special challenge because Athens was a single city state, but a large country like the United States, more geographically similar to the Roman Empire, right? It was going to need a way of delegating government, and there was the issue of representation. And so, but the point is, Federalist number 10 is James Madison's discussion of a very dangerous problem in government. Okay? And so we're going to see right here, and today you're going to start writing a paragraph, and you're going to learn that whenever you write a paragraph or an essay, you need to establish your theme, you need to establish the meaning of what you're doing and set the context for everything else, and the first sentence is going to be absolutely crucial. And what you learn from reading the first sentence of James Madison's Federalist Number 10 is that his entire purpose in explaining in this 10th argument for the Constitution, his entire purpose is to discuss a very special problem. And it's called what he calls the problem of faction. I think this is the key word here. To break and control the violence of faction is his goal. Okay, he wants to explain to Americans what it is. And watch this. By faction, I mean a number of citizens, whether amounting to a majority or a minority. He had such a sophisticated understanding of what could happen. Because sometimes even in a democracy, a minority can rule if it knows how to manipulate the government. And so, who are united and so on. Adverse, look at this. Okay? Read this. I'm going to read this more slowly. By a faction, I understand a number of citizens, whether amounting to a majority or a minority of the whole, who are united and actuated by some common impulse of passion or of interest, adverse to the rights of other citizens. Okay, so the whole purpose of Federalist Number 10 is to protect rights against what James Madison calls the problem of faction. In other words, groups that collude to take away the rights of others. He knows, because as a student of history, that this takes all forms, and that it's not just the majority that can do this. And because you see in monarchies, of course, the king and his aristocracy, that tends to be the faction. Okay, and factions can be small groups, in fact, and they can get away with stuff if the majority is not paying attention, and they can do things that are dangerous to everybody's rights. And the whole point is how to deal with faction, whether it is a minority or a majority. Okay, but that's the reason for writing Federalist Number 10. So when people go and they quote James Madison's definition of republic down here, what they are doing is failing to keep the context. That the whole point of this essay is that a scheme of representation is better, in James Madison's explanation, for defending rights against faction. Okay, so I wanted to bring that up because it's so crucial. It's easy for people, like James Madison is such an authority. And people have a tendency when reading historical texts to just quote, you know, whatever is kind of there, or if they don't understand the full context, or they have some reason for not presenting the full context sometimes. And that is a corruption of the meaning of what people say if you don't keep the full context. The full context here is that a scheme of representation is necessary or is better than a democracy for protecting rights from factions within a society. Abby, go ahead.
I had a question. I saw a word in there that I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
Efficacy? What does that mean?
Okay. Oh, efficacy means how well something works. Okay, to be efficacious or efficient. Okay, so how well it works to do something in this case. And we should, about the nature of the cure. Okay, and how well the cure works because it which it must derive from the union. Oh, I see. So they have efficacy. So in other words, how well a scheme of representation will work. Okay, in order to do that. And it's so interesting because the founding fathers are famous, and in some circles anyway, for these what are called checks and balances. They came up with such a it's such a, an ingenious thing that they did to design the American government so that one part of it would not have too much power. And they recognized that even, I mean, they recognized that even the president, a single man, is a faction. And you better believe it, because we live, more and more nowadays, we have this issue of a president being able to make the laws all by himself. He issues executive orders, and it's as if he's a king. He just says, all right, this is an executive order, it's a law. And this has happened over time in different ways in American history, and there are cases in which it's really interesting, such as during the Civil War, where it makes sense. But more and more presidents are doing that, and that makes a one-man faction who takes can take away rights. And then on the other hand, the Congress and the Senate and so on can be a faction as well. Although they tend to be balanced, and that's the whole point of the design of the system, is that they're the ones that are supposed to make the laws. And then on the other hand, there's supposed to be a Supreme Court that will judge the laws and make sure that they are not prejudicial to rights and so on. So the American system, which we talked about last year, and which you can study in greater detail in the history of American government, is designed to protect rights against faction, which is that much more sophisticated than just the statement, kind of protect rights against majority, because the founders realized that there were all kinds of factions. They were so brilliant. So I'm glad that, again, I want to give some credit here to Kenny who brought this up. He said, Republic is a government that has a system of representation. That type of definition, which you'll find in all kinds of textbooks, is drawn directly from Federalist Number 10, as you can see. And it's an example of context dropping. And so, what you're losing, if you accept such a definition, if you accept this as a definition and you quote it as a definition, you're losing the context. And the context is the protection of rights. And that's the essence. Okay? So, I think that was worth emphasizing here because, a lot of things with regard to history are controversial and or require quite a bit of interpretation and are what we call polemical. In other words, people argue about them, what they really do mean. And you have to, really be careful whether or not you, if you swallow something like this without digesting it, you're going to get a serious case of mental indigestion. So you gotta actually look at the full context and understand it properly, which is the full context is the protection of rights. Okay? All right, I definitely wanted to highlight that because your writing assignment is going to be, to connect the ancient world of Athens and Rome, and the ancient democracies and republics to us here and now. Okay, so you are going to get an assignment, and it's a paragraph length writing assignment. So everybody here hopefully has their pencils ready or their typing, whatever, your fingers ready, poised on the keyboard in order to write this paragraph length writing assignment. Okay, and basically your assignment is to write a paragraph length explanation of how the world today is connected to ancient Greece and Rome. That's how we are connected. Now, it may occur to you to do this in a variety of ways. As it turns out, like I said, I'm going to tell you how to do it. I'm really, and this is going to be, like I said, in some regards, really easy. But I'm going to do it in a certain way. And your, you know, your contribution here, I'm going to outline this for you in essence. Okay. And your contribution is going to be simply to write it in your own personal writing style and really, you know, weave it together into a good story. I'm going to give you the outline. I'm going to give you the theme and I'm going to give you the outline. And then it's going to be your job to write it. Okay. And, I think that will be kind of the test. How well you are able to put the facts together is basically the test here. Okay, because that really is the essence of it when it comes to history. You are exposed to many facts, and the thing that matters is not whether or not you can remember them. The thing that matters is whether or not you understand them. So that's what this writing assignment is going to be all about, is testing your understanding, because how you write will reveal how well you understand. It will, how you connect the facts will reveal how well you understand. So I'm going to give you all the facts and then let you go at it. See how well you can connect them. And I'm even going to give them to you in order. So when I give writing assignments, I give you a really big boost, because the point here is not to basically let you loose on the facts as if you have all of the knowledge that's necessary in order to know these things by yourself. It's just not the case. So in acknowledgement of that, there are certain things that I need to do so that you can get the most out of this assignment, and not, you know, that it's not just a pretense or that it's not some kind of, you know, impossible task. It's going to be a writing assignment that you're capable of doing. And so here is both the first sentence of your paragraph, a candidate for it. You are allowed to use this, but you're not required to use this, and the thesis of the paragraph. So I definitely recommend now that you write this down. And if you want to use it as your first sentence, you are welcome to use it. Okay. And it will help. This basically will, if you're clear on this point, then it will direct basically the entire proceedings of your writing assignment. Okay. So here it is. The United States of America today is a republic that people call a democracy. And both of these ideas come from the ancient world. Okay, so that's a sentence. That's a single interesting sentence. It's kind of it's an assertion, right? And basically, the entire paragraph that you are going to write is going to explain the truth of that. And I'm going to tell you how to do it. Okay, so get this down. I'll come back to this. But basically what I'm going to do now is I'm going to toggle back and forth between this page, which we're going to fill in a little bit in point form, the Portland chart / anchor fact timeline that you're going to use, in order to do this, or as an aid for writing this paragraph. And it's already on the class webpage. So let me go to that. Right, so if you go to today's class, you will see it there. Okay, here it is. It is a simplified version of that, you know, large Portland chart that we looked at last time in this class. At this level, Nemo says, "I don't see it." Well, it'll come up. Right, it might be delayed by a couple seconds. You see it now, I hope. So. Nemo says, "No, I don't understand that." Who else? Tell me if you see. Do you see this? Alexander says, "I see it." So, Nemo, it's some kind of internet issue on your end, and I'm sure it'll resolve itself shortly. Okay? So, it's based on the chart that we did last time, but it's just, you know, the top part of it, right? Alexander, thank you. Nemo, you might be on the wrong tab, right? Of of your display if you're navigating around in there. Thank you, Alexander. Okay. But anyway, this is the top part of that chart, right? With the various civilizations being color-coded and represented on separate lines, right? Where we had the Middle East represented with the purple color, starting with Egypt here. And then we have European civilization represented in green, with the ancient world in gray, and then America represented in blue. Right? So that's just the top part of that from that last lecture. And so basically, what you are going to do in this paragraph, okay, is in some ways really, really simple. But that's because I really want everybody to get it. It doesn't have to be complicated. It really doesn't. Okay? What you're going to do in this paragraph, the first sentence does this. Your first sentence does this. Right? It says, here we are today, and the themes that we have today of Republican democracy come from this. Okay, so it's possible to leap right back into the past and establish a connection, right, to the ancient past that way. But what we're going to do in this paragraph is we're going to use this Portolan chart to get back. And that's going to be your writing assignment. Okay, to use this chart to get back to the present. So we'll do it together here in class, and then we'll write it out in terms of kind of a point form. And you'll have the notes, and basically that's it. You'll have the recipe for the paragraph. Okay, so going back, I got to take away my annotations. So going back to this, right, this is our beginning. The United States of America today is a republic that people call a democracy, and both of these ideas come from the ancient world. All right, so what do you think comes next? Nemo, I'm sorry you're having this display problem. Maybe you can recruit a parent to help you here. It doesn't make sense to me, and I don't know what's causing it because it's never happens. Okay? You might have to use the recordings. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to work our way forward from this statement, starting with Athens and Rome. Okay, so what would you say? How are you going to navigate? Trying to toggle back and forth here. We need to start. What do we need to say about these two? What are our anchor facts? What comes next in our exposition? I'm surprised that's a hard question. Is it a hard question? Or are you just holding out on me? Let's go back to this. This is our starting. This is our navigation, the beginning of our navigation. The United States of America today is a republic that people call a democracy, and both of these ideas come from the ancient world. Okay, really? That's the assertion. What comes next? What makes sense to navigate back to the present now in a substantial way, in a historical way? How are we going to navigate back? Theo, what do we need?
Well, we need to somehow connect them.
Yeah, we're going to work our way back on this path is what we are going to do here. So what do you know? We're gonna get back to this Republican democracy thing up here, starting from here. So what do we need to do? Yeah, Theo, continue.
Well, we just need to go up the anchor fact timeline, connecting them to each other until we get to.
Okay, all right. So what's our first thing then? Where do we start?
Birth of Jesus.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Birth of Jesus.
Well, no, no, I'm glad you said that because, no, definitely not, because that one doesn't have to do anything to do with Republican democracy.
So we would probably go to follow around then.
Well, wait a minute. We're not ready for that! We're not ready for that! How come we're not ready to go there yet?
Because we haven't really explained Athens and Rome.
Well, that's it. Thank you. Okay, right? So if we're going to navigate in our anchor fact way, right, we need to start with Athens and Rome. Okay? So because we've made this assertion. Made this assertion that our republican democracy, these key words of the modern world, come from the ancient world. So where do they come from? Okay, so the first thing that we need to do to include in our paragraph here is we need to take these. Okay, and we need to, we have to explain them. We have to say where each of these words comes from. Okay, so this is just me in point form. And again, like I said, you should copy this down. Because it's all you're going to need to do. You're going to have to write it in your own words. But basically, you need to elaborate. Okay? So the story is, democracy was invented in Athens, circa 508 BC. And the idea of a republic comes from Rome, circa 509 BC. Alright, so that gets us started. Okay, but now we're going to have to trace, how did it get to us? Okay, notice what it says. These ideas come from the ancient world. Okay, well, how did they get to us? Okay, so now I sense that Theo's on the right track here. And Rosie, you want to go ahead and tell us the next stage of our explanation? Go ahead. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Perfect. See, we're here. Okay. And we're going to do in our story is we're going to go like this. Okay. So now, of course, the next milestone that we have, which Theo was thinking about, was the birth of Jesus, but that's not related to this particular theme. So it's connected to us in a different way. It's connected to the religion of Christianity. Okay, but that doesn't, you know, when you're deciding what facts to choose, you got to choose the ones that are relevant to your theme. So we have this ancient world with its ideas. How did it get to us? Well, that world went away. It disappeared. Okay, Rosie, continue.
The people in England brought the idea to America.
Oh, okay, you're absolutely right, but I don't want to leap, right? What I want to do, you're taking a huge leap, which is really good. You're describing kind of this process here, okay, but we're not there yet. We got to get there, okay, to that transfer of the ideas to our world. So describe, you know, be a navigator is what I'm inviting everybody here to do, right? Be the navigator. You're in ancient Athens and Rome. How do we get here? Okay, how did we get to here? We need this one. Okay, that's our next thing. Okay, the ancient world collapsed. We get to where we are. We don't live in the ancient world. We get to where we are because the ancient world collapsed. Okay, that's the next thing you need to talk about. I'm going to go ahead and collect that and kind of put my own formulation here. Okay, we've got that. And how do we get to where we are? This is slightly new in terms of, right, the formulation. Rosie, go ahead.
You have to do the Dark Ages.
Yeah, right, perfect. Exactly. We're following the path. Okay? How did it get to us? Well, first of all, the world had to go through a long Dark Ages, 1,000 years. Worth of really tough times. We don't get here just by leaping back and forth. Okay? We get there because we know about this because there was a long, tortuous path that it got to us. So yeah, we have to go through the Dark Ages. The barbarians caused Rome to fall. Okay? The ancient world collapsed. So you can write that out if you want, right? Okay? And then after that came the Dark Ages. And following the Dark Ages, yeah, Rosie's on this one. Rosie, go ahead.
The Renaissance.
Renaissance, which means what? It's a French word that means something very specific. Who know? I know everybody knows this one. Keen, please.
Rebirth.
Rebirth of?
The rebirth of Greek and Roman ideas.
There you go. All right. So, see, we got to have that. Because if we got the Dark Ages and then we go over to here, well, then where is this? We got to have something that brings it back. Okay? So, absolutely. We have the theme of the Dark Ages and the Renaissance. Nemo's typing notes feverishly, he says. Okay? So, it's okay. I understand that part. Okay? So, Renaissance means rebirth. Greek and Roman ideas. Good. Excellent. Okay. All right. How did that rebirth of ideas get to America? Next item. All right. Rosie?
Columbus.
Yeah. Columbus and everybody else, right? I mean, it definitely starts with Columbus. Okay. Definitely starts with Columbus. And that's the next thing that you've got to include. Okay, I'm just putting it in point form. Your understanding of it is what's going to go in your paragraph. What does it mean? You know, Columbus discovered America. Why is that part of our port-a-land chart? In your own words, how are you going to say that? Theo?
Well, so Columbus discovered America, which allowed Europeans to settle there.
Okay.
English.
Mm-hmm.
Some of their children, grandchildren were the founding fathers.
Okay, right. You're working your way towards 1776, which is good, right? So, yeah, the discovery of America leads to the colonization of America, right? I'm going to go ahead and just copy these up here so that anybody who's trying to get them down isn't totally scrambling, okay? So, this is the point that you've got to have. The discovery of America leads to Europeans coming over here. Okay? And then, as Theo says, English colonists declared their independence to make a republic. We're back to where we are. Okay? So this is our navigation, right? We leap back to the ancient world. And now we know how to get back here. We get back because, okay, the ancient world disappeared. There was a dark age. Then it was reborn. Columbus and the Europeans brought it to America. And then the founding fathers brought back the idea of republic specifically. And then, well, I put conclusion there because basically it's going to be on you. I'll let you have a chance to express your originality here in that particular moment. Okay, so it's going to be up to you to say, all right, what is it all, you know, give me some kind of inspiring conclusion to all of this, right? Something like, we are here because of the ancients. The world is as great as it is because of this and ancient inventions that we rely on today. Theo.
So, the world is as free as it is because all this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then the United States was created, which allowed it to be a very free country, which inspired other countries to be more free. So we live in a comparatively fantastically free world, especially compared to the Dark Ages.
Yeah, especially, right? All right, so that's definitely all true. Of course, you're going to have to find a way to turn that into, you know, a crisp formulation for your writing, right? Because you don't want your writing to be too wordy, okay? Which is, it's fine when we're talking about it like this necessarily. We have to say more. But, of course, you're going to want to cut that down and make it really succinct at the end. We live in the free world that we do because of this ancient connection. Oh, see, I just gave it away. But you're going to have to write your own. Write your own. So this is it. This is your paragraph. You basically have the entire thing in front of you here. if you've written these notes down, and of course, if you didn't have the time, then you can get them off the recording. But basically, all you need to do is, no, I'm not going to repeat that again, Nemo, because that's my conclusion. You have to give it your own spin. No, you basically, all you need to do is take these point form notes and write them as a story. And here's going to be the crucial thing that we're going to talk about on Wednesday. You've got 2 days to do it. I need your writing assignments before class on Wednesday. And given how much I've given you, right, this is not too hard. I should start receiving some of these about an hour after class. If you take it seriously, that's when, you know, you'll be done. So I'm giving you 2 days because I'm so generous. But, you know, I need them before Wednesday, because what we're going to do on Wednesday is we're going to look at how you crafted the narrative. Okay? So in other words, how you connected these is the final measure of whether or not you get it. And that's the test, to see how you're doing, whether or not you can navigate back and forth. Okay? All right. Anything else? Last questions or comments or concerns? I will send an email confirmation of this assignment, but it tends to be, I need to make sure that I've got a good class list, which is a little tricky for me to do. But I'll try to get the email out to you as a reminder. But basically, if you've got all these notes down, then, you know, hopefully that's enough. And you can write them, you can write it down right now for yourself independently. Wednesday before class. And don't even call it a due date. It's just when it's due. Wednesday before class. Earlier is better. There you go. Okay? And by the way, if you're on the recordings, you should definitely do this as well, because you will have a chance to measure your paragraph against the ones of the students in the class, and you'll it's important to follow the theme here of the connectivity of the narration that you're going to be achieving is the test of whether or not you understand. All right. So good luck with that. Like I said, I promise that you'll have all the class notes. So if you really feel like, some of this is a little shaky for me, and we've been talking about it, and Mr. Powell's been discussing this, and I appreciate that, but on the other hand, there's some of this I'm a little shaky on, then read the class notes, which, as I said, I promise you very soon, probably within a half an hour of now, because that's exactly what I'm going to go do. As soon as we hang up here, is I'm going to go finish the class notes and post them to the class webpage so that you can read from that, and that will bolster everything that we've done in class if you need it. Okay? If you don't, just go ahead. Run with it. Okay, last chance for questions or comments. Okay, guys. Good luck. Looking forward to your submissions. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.